welcome to Addicted to Murder. This is Courtney, licensed professional counselor with over a decade of experience.
And this is Trisha, and it's that time of year when we extirpate our weeds.
Extirpate? I assume that means to pull out or get rid of?
By the roots.
Oh,
I mean, you could extirpate your hair, I guess.
That's true.
Or what your teeth. Called? What's that called again when people pull out their hair?
Trichotillomania?
Yeah. Extirpate your trichotillomania. Indulgence. I guess it's not an indulgence.
No,
it's problem.
It's a compulsion, really.
Compulsion problem. Okay, well, anyway. we're back from a little hiatus, and I've got a question for Courtney. Okay. Sorry, I'm a little brain dead today. Apologize to everybody. I might have asked this in the past, but what is the most recent non-school book you have read or listened to, if you do like Audible?
Let's see. Should we also not count murder books?
Book for fun. Okay. If your book for fun was a murder book, that's okay.
Let's see. I was reading a book. Oh, what was it called? I think it's called Where the Apricots Grew.
I thought you were going to say Where the Red Ferns Grow.
No, I don't read that book for fun because it makes me cry.
It is awful. What's give us a little plot.
Yeah, so it's about, so it takes place in like modern day Iraq.
Okay.
Kind of post-war Iraq.
Okay.
And it's kind of the story of like a local person who gets sort of swept into kind of some like espionage a little bit with, like, when she gets a job at the Australian consulate in Iraq.
Okay.
And, like, but, like, forms a friendship with, like, the wife of the ambassador and...
Okay. Was it, like, did you like it?
I did like it. I don't think I finished it.
Oh.
Yet.
Okay.
But what I've read so far, I liked.
So it wasn't so compelling that you couldn't put it down, but it was good. It was, you'll go back to it.
It was more like I just, like... had to put it down to read things that I was required to read instead.
Required readings.
Yep.
Yeah.
They just took over.
Yes, they do. Well, I actually just finished an audio book today on my walk earlier. It was What Dreams May Come. So I already saw the movie. I love the movie. And I wanted to actually read the book because I heard that it was slightly different. And it was good. It was a little more depressing than the movie.
Yeah.
But it for someone like me who likes reading about like spirituality books and shit, not necessarily your cup of tea, but I found it pretty interesting.
Oh.
And I finished it in like 2 days.
Wow.
Audio style.
Right.
Yeah. I have my mom and I share an Audible account, so we have all these credits, so it's just cheaper than actually buying the book.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So
anyways. I should do that more because I listen to a lot of like podcasts and stuff, but I should probably listen to audiobooks too since I like books.
So my work has a book club, and I told them I would try to join, and I downloaded the book for the book club this year, or I mean this month, and I haven't started it. It's my next one.
Oh, what is it?
Something about an alien.
Okay.
I can't remember. Have you watched Resident Alien on Netflix?
I have not.
I think it's so funny.
Yeah.
It's like an alien kind of crash lands here, and then, you know, it's the whole humans are weird thing. And
got
he takes
it.
A human shape, and then, you know, of course he becomes more human and starts to feel human emotions, but it's pretty funny.
Got it. I think my mom was telling me she liked that show.
Yeah, I think it's funny. So, all right. Well, good question.
It was a good question.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for asking that question.
Yes. Well, Courtney, we are on the big one. My big one.
Yes.
Who's your big one? Do you have a big one? Do we already do your big one?
I think my big one was Gary Ridgway way back in the day.
He was pretty big.
And Israel Keyes. I was really interested in Israel Keyes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did do those. Well, we're doing Jeffrey Dahmer and, you know, a.k.a. the Milwaukee Cannibal. And we use the book... Jeffrey Dahmer, A Bizarre Journey into the Mind of America's Most Tormented Serial Killer by Dr. Joel Norris. And I looked him up. He's PhD, not MD. Mm-hmm. And we also use the Dahmer tapes, which was on Netflix. So we're finally here. We made it past our 100th episode, and now we're going to go and do the job I set out to do 2 years ago. We're going to discuss his early childhood. Do you have, or Courtney, have you watched that Netflix drama with Evan Peters?
I watched like the first half of it when it first kind of came out, kind of up until the point of his first murder. And then I think I just got like distracted by something else and other things and just never went back to it.
So that's about where I stopped watching it too, but I stopped watching it for a different reason. I just, it was that Evan Peters is too good of an actor and it was just too much for me. I don't like gore and, everyone that knows that I do at this podcast just assume that I'm true crime all the time, but I'm not.
I know. Yeah, you're not.
Yeah. So
that's more me.
Yeah. So I'm like, when I'm not doing true crime, I want to be laughing. And that is not a funny series at all.
That's true. It is not fun.
And I already know the story pretty well. So, or I mean, I feel like I've already done enough research that I didn't necessarily need to watch it in real time or whatever on that video. So I stopped watching it because it was getting to be like giving me the ick inside. And it was about that time when he killed his first person that that happened. So, all right. So we're going to just dive on into his childhood and all that it entails.
All right.
Joyce Flint married Lionel Dahmer. By the way, I love the name Lionel. In August of 1959, Lionel was still in college at this time, and prior to him graduating, they welcomed a little boy into the world. So Jeffrey was born May 21st, 1960. He's 3 months younger than my mom. So that just puts stuff in perspective when these serial killers are like, your parents' age, or, you know.
Yep.
Lionel finished his bachelor's degree, and then he went on to get a master's, and at this time they moved from Wisconsin to Iowa. And then Lionel went to get his PhD in chemistry. So he must have been a pretty smart dude. Or at least a very dedicated dude.
Yes.
When he got when he got that, his PhD, he was employed by PPG Industries in Barberton, Ohio. So then the family moved to Ohio. Jeffrey was six now and was enrolled at Hazel Harvey Elementary School. But just to jump back just a little bit, I've read in a few places that Jeffrey had a double hernia surgery in his groin right before he turned 4 years old. Now, apparently this was a traumatic ordeal for him as he thought they were going to remove his penis during the surgery. He woke up with immense pain in his scrotal area after the surgery. His father would later claim that he was a changed kid after that, after the surgery. Like, he was less happy and I think a little more fearful and all that. Courtney, do you have any ideas about this?
Well, you know, people respond to things in different ways, and something that one person might experience as routine, like a surgery, you know, another might experience as traumatic. And so if Jeffrey was truly terrified going into the surgery and then experienced intense pain after, he could have really imprinted that experience as traumatic. And, I mean, trauma can certainly take away joy.
Have you ever seen a hernia in the scrotal area? Because I have. I've had a friend's baby that had one.
I have not.
So it kind of does, in that area, look like it's coming out of the skin. So he might have, like, just kind of been confused on what was his penis and what wasn't. And when they said they were going to, like, you know, remove it or push it back in or whatever, that might be why he was thinking that.
That would make sense.
So that's just my...
Your medical knowledge.
Well, personal knowledge, because I've seen it, and it is kind of an odd thing, and it protrudes, and it's like, you know, inch out, depending on how big the hernia is. But back to Jeffrey being six. During this time, his mother was pregnant with her second child. She apparently was having difficulties with this pregnancy. She was depressed and anxious about the upcoming delivery. Jeffrey, according to some sources, was having trouble as well. He was already starting to feel neglected and abandoned by his mom, who was totally consumed with her current pregnancy. Courtney, any thoughts on this?
So some jealousy and anger about the birth of a sibling is completely normal for children, but this is usually kind of overcome through positive interactions between the child and their parents, and reassurances that the child is still loved. For Jeffrey, however, he did not get that reassurance because his mother's depression and anxiety really prevented her from being able to attend to his emotional needs.
Well, when little David was born, his Jeffrey's teachers were already noting that Jeffrey was feeling neglected. Jeffrey would start to have feelings of resentment towards his baby brother pretty much right from the get-go. And unfortunately, Jeffrey, instead of developing friendships at school at this time, withdrew into himself and started taking his pain out on other things. Reports are that animals suffered at the hands of Jeffrey. Courtney, going back to animal cruelty, is this the age where it typically starts?
6 years old is pretty early for intentional cruelty to animals to start. It's more typical for children who grew up to be violent to start hurting animals around age 10, and it's most common and severe during adolescence. So Jeffrey was definitely an early bloomer in this area.
Great. The family moved to a bigger house in a better part of town. Apparently, Joyce didn't take the move so well. I guess there was a pond that was shared between her property and a neighbor, and that made Joyce angry. She threw fits about it, and she'd cry. And it got to the point that to get her off their backs, the neighbors offered to fill their part of the pond in with dirt so that the body of water would all be on the Dahmer property. Courtney, this would just piss me off. Do you have any thoughts about a diagnosis for Joyce? I mean, we don't know a lot, but what are you thinking?
Well, her depression and anxiety were pretty well documented, but I would also wonder if there's a possible personality disorder at play, perhaps like narcissistic personality disorder, given her kind of self-centered nature. But I also wonder if there might be another mood disorder other than depression that could explain her mood swings and erratic behavior, like maybe like bipolar disorder.
Well, by the age of 8, Jeffrey was finally making friends. And during this time, there is an allegation of sexual abuse to Jeffrey by another child. Lionel claims that Jeff was abused, but Jeff would later deny it. Courtney, can you go over PSB a little bit, or problematic sexual behavior, both on the victim and perpetrator side, and what may be happening and why?
So when there is sexual abuse that occurs between two same or similarly aged children, both children are likely to be victims. The child who abuses the other most likely has experienced sexual abuse as well. Not always, but often. And might be reenacting their trauma as a way of processing it. And then, you know, they might victimize other children as a way of building connection to them, because that's how, you know, they've been taught to build connection. Or it could be as a way of trying to gain control over something in their lives that they feel out of control about, mainly if they're being abused still themselves. And then the child who is abused in this situation is often curious when sexual behavior is suggested because they, you know, don't know what it is. Or they might be coerced into engaging by the belief that they have to do it, or maybe the other child won't be their friend anymore. And so both children in this scenario, I think, should be evaluated and receive therapeutic supports.
Jeffrey starts to collect dead animals while he's in elementary school. Mostly it's roadkill, but he would also collect insects as well. Friends of his described his dead animal collection as massive. One of Jeff's classmates said he would collect the animals, then dismember them and put them in jars. He seemed to be very interested in the decomposition of the carcasses. He would experiment with different ways to pickle the animals, and he had somehow acquired formaldehyde, I'm assuming from his father. He had his collection in a little shed in the back of the property that he called, quote, the hut. He had all the privacy he could want in this shed. Courtney, how alarming is this hobby of Jeff's?
Well, this is actually kind of a complicated answer. So on the one hand, interest in biology and the processes of death and decomposition, like, in itself is not harmful. You know, plenty of children are curious about how animals die and what, you know, their anatomy might look like. And, you know, they might dissect an animal that they find dead. Like, if their cat brings home a bird or something, they might do that. And most of them, right, go on to become, like, forensic pathologists or something like that. But it does become more abnormal to want to keep and collect the dead animals as opposed to just explore observing, them and then bury
discarding,
them. Yeah. But hey, you know, some adults also love taxidermy, which is not that much different. So the main thing that would really separate a slightly morbid but possibly normal interest from a concerning one is if Jeffrey were killing the animals first.
Did you enjoy dissecting a frog or whatever you did in middle school? I had to dissect a frog and I did not enjoy it.
No, we had to dissect a cow eye and I sat out and refused to do it.
Yeah, same. I mean, I did it, but I didn't enjoy it. There was one person in my class that like took the skin off with her hands.
Some people are just fascinated.
I still remember it and I don't remember a lot of things. Mm. So that one made a mark on me. One of Jeff's friends said that he took him into the hut to show his collection and they saw these jars with brown liquid and floating stuff in them. One of the jars, Jeffrey claimed, had a raccoon in it. The kids didn't believe him, so he, quote, took the jar and smashed it on a rock, and the smell was so bad that we all vomited. Jeffrey also would bury some of the animals. He had basically a pet cemetery that he tended to and organized. He even put crosses on the graves. Neighbors claimed to have seen frogs and cats, quote, impaled or staked to trees. It sounds like he would bury the bodies, but remove the heads and impale them on little grave markers he created. Jeffrey would ask his friends to go with him hunting for carcasses, but most of the time he was alone on his bike on the back roads, looking for dead things to bring home and mess around with. He had a chemical set that he would use to see which chemicals would dissolve the body parts the best. Courtney, what can I even ask?
I mean, this is certainly becoming more concerning as we go along.
Yeah. Of course, he progressed from collecting dead animals to stalking them while they were living. It was when he was in 10th grade, that people's pets started to go missing in the neighborhood. So I would lose my shit if someone came and took my dog to torture and kill it. I just can't understand why people do this. And I never will. I just won't. Well, Jeff hadn't been seen killing anything, but people were suspicious. And one of his classmates recalled that he had seen Jeffrey turn a dog skull into some kind of totem. Jeffrey had arranged the skull on a stake and nailed the body to a tree. They also saw a large fire near the mutilated corpse surrounded by 13 smaller fires. Courtney?
So I also cannot fathom what it would be like to feel okay about hurting innocent animals. But you know, that's what separates us from them. But, you know, many of our killers did start off with animal victims, and it's pretty common to see in the development of a serial killer that it starts with animals. And so it's also concerning how ritualistic Jeffrey's behavior was with his dead animals. Rituals are an important part of serial killers' MO. And so Jeffrey engaging in ritualistic torture and ceremonial discarding of animals is a major red flag.
Somewhere in the book, it said something about devil worship. What are your thoughts? Do you think he was just like screwing around?
I think he was just screwing around.
Okay. That's kind of how I got to.
Right. Just, like, or he was making fires up his own rituals, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah. Jeffrey would also mutilate fish that he caught. He and his friends would go fishing. They would usually let the fish go, like the friends would let the fish go if they caught any, but Jeffrey would keep his, and then he would cut it up and toss back like the fish all cut up just to see other fish devour that fish's remains. When he was asked why he cut up the fish like that, he responded, quote, "I want to see what it looks like inside. I'd like to see how things work." Another friend said that Jeffrey was also fascinated by heartbeats. He would put his ear to his friend's chest to hear the heartbeat, and he would also touch their veins to feel the pulses. He even told one of his classmates after he put his head to his chest that he was going to eat his heart out of his chest that night. He didn't do that, but yeah, Courtney.
So his reasoning for cutting up the fish seems to fit with some of the more normal, typical curiosity that kids have about the world, and wanting to know how things work, like he said. But as for the fascination with heartbeats, they are really the essential life force of animals and people. You know, everyone's heartbeat is a little bit different, and can be impacted by so many things like fear, exercise, excitement, etc. And, you know, not having a heartbeat is the difference between life and death. And we've already seen that Jeffrey Dahmer is pretty obsessed with death.
Maybe it's because I don't really like people touching me. I'm not one of those people. But if someone, even my friends, was just listening to my heartbeat, like making comments, I'd be like, yeah, you're freaking weird. Get away from me. I wouldn't enjoy that.
Yeah, I feel like probably most people wouldn't. But I think it's a little different because it doesn't say what age he was when he would do this. Because if you're like a younger kid, I feel like it's a little bit less creepy.
Yeah. Well, the author of the book, Dr. Joel Norris, speculates that Dahmer met five conditions that he feels indicated criminal behavior later in life. So I'm going to list them here. And Courtney, why don't you tell us your thoughts on his analysis of the symptoms? So he says these five things that Jeffrey had. So parental neglect, eldest and least favored child, outsider in the family, ambiguous stories of physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, and extreme cruelty to animals.
I mean, I think that Dr. Norris is onto something and has a pretty correct in his analysis of predictors of violent behaviors. You know, some of these are also part of like the dark triad that we've talked about, and have been linked to, you know, antisocial personality disorder and conduct disorder and all of those things. And I mean, Jeffrey did experience all of these things as a child, or at least is suspected to have experienced all of them. And I can think of several of our previous serial killers who would also fit this profile, including Ted Bundy and Israel Keyes.
I was talking at work about the dark triad. And I mean, I think obviously the main one is the cruelty to animals.
Yep.
So he didn't seem to be, well, I mean, he lit fires in his little cult circle, or not cult, whatever that was, ritual circle. But I don't know that that's necessarily fire, considered fire setting. We don't know anything about him urinating in his bed.
We don't.
So, but still, I feel like that's the most.
That's the biggest red flag, because plenty of kids wet the bed or are interested and fascinated by fire. I don't think I've ever met a 10-year-old boy that's not fascinated by fire.
I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
If there's a fire, I have a stick and I'm poking it.
Right. So those things alone are not necessarily concerning, but like cruelty to animals is always concerning.
So by the time Jeff entered high school, he had developed another problem. One that would follow him until his eventual capture and perhaps beyond. I mean, they do get awfully creative in prison. Alcohol. Jeff was known to be drinking beer at 7:30 in the morning, and he would keep it in his bag or in his locker at school, and he would drink throughout the day. He was also known to carry beers on his person in his raggedy old army jacket, which had large pockets. It is speculated that he was actually considered a full-blown alcoholic in his teens. He was, you know, perhaps numbing the pain of his home life and the feelings that he didn't know how to manage. Some accounts have him drinking as early as actually age 12. Some of his peers later interviewed would make statements like, quote, "I don't remember much about him other than his drinking. He pretty much kept to himself." Some others would notice that he was kind of creepy, but he wasn't violent, or they didn't see the violence. He did actually have a few school activities. He was in the band as a freshman and played tennis throughout high school. He was known to lift weights, and he was becoming kind of a big dude. If I think he was 6'1 or 6'2 eventually. He also had a job as a waiter. So, Courtney, let's talk a little bit about alcoholism. It seems a little obvious that his parents weren't paying that much attention to him if he was drunk most of his teenage years. I don't care how good you think you are at hiding that kind of stuff. There's obvious signs. It was also noted that none of the faculty seemed to have a clue about Jeffrey's problem.
Well, you know, people who start to use alcohol at a young age often do so for two reasons. One, you already mentioned, to numb emotional and psychological pain. And often because it can act as sort of a social lubricant that relieves social anxiety and awkwardness. And so I can see how Jeffrey would see the benefit from both of these outcomes. And, you know, alcohol is extremely addictive, and heavy daily users can require alcohol in their system to function normally and avoid terrible withdrawal symptoms. So if Jeffrey was drinking daily, starting around age 12, he likely did need to drink to function by the time he got to high school. And so if we think about, like, nobody seemed to notice, I think it could either be that maybe at school he was only drinking enough to function, or that someone noticed and just didn't care.
Yeah.
Or and didn't do anything about it because it was the 70s.
I mean, his dad was gone a lot, I guess.
And mom and, was very much in her own world.
Yeah, preoccupied with David and herself. Mm-hmm. So his behavior at school continued to get more strange. He would do things seemingly to just get attention. Some things he did were funny, but others, like drawing body outlines out of chalk on the floor, were kind of alarming. Jeffrey would pretend to have seizures in public to get attention from his peers. And at one point, he would actually get paid to do his seizure, you know, stunt in the mall. He would also do things like be in the library and yell out a teacher's name over and over again, but then act as if he did nothing. He was also known to make loud sheep noises all over the school, and that would make his classmates laugh. When he would pull these antics, his classmates would say, "Oh, there he is, quote, doing a Dahmer." One of his most daring pranks occurred when the class took a trip to Washington, D.C. Dahmer made a bet that he could get into the White House. His friends were skeptical, but he found a phone, called the directory, and somehow talked himself into a private tour and actually saw the vice president's office. It should be noted that when he did these things, he was probably drunk. Courtney, what do you think was the reason he did all of these things? Was it so he, you know, he felt so ignored at home that he just wanted to make sure that wouldn't happen at school?
I mean, kind of. I think that Jeffrey was in desperate need of attention and affection, but had absolutely no idea how to get it appropriately. His behavior strikes me as very immature for his age, and more like something a kid might do in, like, elementary school to get attention. It's not surprising that he would have immature social skills, given the lack of parenting he received and his difficulty making friends at a young age. I mean, most of us, I think, can think of at least one kid from class who behaved this way and then was pretty confused when people didn't really want to hang out with them. Like, maybe they laughed when it was happening, but they didn't want to be friends.
I mean, maybe he was so socially awkward that, like, the only way he thought he could be valuable as a person to these people was to be funny.
Exactly.
And, like, do stupid stuff. I don't know.
Right. If he was the butt of the joke, he would make himself the butt of the joke.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it worked. I mean, it sounds like he was in a way, like, in a weird way, popular. Because
at least well-known.
Yeah, because of the weird stuff he did, and people thought he was funny. So even though Jeffrey was kind of known as a weird drunk, but, you know, possibly funny guy with perhaps social anxiety, you know, based on the drinking, he did go to prom. His date agreed to go with Jeff, who was a friend of a friend, but apparently she regretted it partway into the evening. He was very nervous when he picked her up for their date. He was so nervous about putting on her corsage that her mother actually had to do it for him. When they got to the prom, Jeffrey pulled out her chair and then disappeared for the rest of the night. When he came back to her 2 hours later, he told her he got hungry and ate 5 hamburgers. She saw the wrappers in her car, so she believed him. He did not try to kiss her. He shook her hand at the end of the evening. Courtney, he would say in later interviews that he knew he was gay at age 13. Dahmer. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about when a teenager who is homosexual feels that they cannot be themselves in this way.
So anyone who feels like they need to hide or repress a part of who they are will experience negative impacts. This may be expressed as depression, anger, substance abuse, and suicidal thoughts or actions. Can you imagine what it would be like to wonder if your family will reject you or stop loving you if you were able to be your true self around them? I mean, that can be very scary and hopeless, especially for a teenager. And for Jeffrey, this was the 1970s. It was much less okay to be openly gay, especially in middle America, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even being out was often really dangerous.
Right. Yeah, I feel really bad for Jeff. Like, he's got so much stuff going on, and it's just one more reason he's probably medicating himself with alcohol beyond the other things, is, like, knowing this about himself and feeling that nobody would accept him. And why would he feel they would accept him? His parents aren't accepting him or don't seem to be caring that much about him now before he comes out as gay. So that would just make it worse.
Yeah. And I mean, internalized homophobia is very much a real thing, where you know that you are gay, but hate yourself because you're gay, because it's, you know, it's thought of as not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so it looks like we have two sides to Jeffrey Dahmer at this point. When he is drinking, he likes to do funny stuff to gain attention from his classmates. He's popular in that way. He was, you know, really doing a Dahmer. But on the other hand, most likely when he was more sober, he was socially awkward. He was a closeted homosexual, very quiet. Jeffrey was obviously struggling to find himself, to understand himself, and to find his place with his peers. His father was often traveling or absent because of work, and his mother seemed to favor his younger brother, David. Most likely, he did not have any friends who were gay, and therefore a big part of his life he felt he had to keep secret. To be honest, at that time, it may not have been all that safe, like you said, to be openly gay male at school. During his senior year, another devastating blow occurred. His parents decided to get divorced. Now, it was a long time coming, and the neighborhood was not surprised. They had always argued. In fact, per the Jeffrey Dahmer tapes on Netflix, his mom would slap his dad often, so like domestic violence going on. Jeffrey's senior year was a bad time for Jeff. He rarely went to school, and when he did, he was drunk. It sounds like his teachers just basically pushed him through the system. So, Courtney, do you have any final thoughts on today's episode?
So, I don't know if we're going to talk about this in the next episode, but the way in which his parents split up was also traumatizing and neglectful. I'm not going to give it away.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it might be a pivotal moment in Jeffrey's development and a driving force in his future murders.
I also think it maybe solidifies his personality disorder.
Probably.
We will be talking about it next time.
Yes, we will.
So, yeah. So anyways, there's the sad beginnings of Jeffrey Dahmer, who goes on to be an awful serial killer.
Yes, he does.
He doesn't suffer physical abuse or sexual abuse as far as we know from his parents or caregivers.
Right.
But again, as you have said more than once, neglect is the most
profound, insidious, impactful.
And it at least it appears that that is what he is suffering. His dad's gone a lot and his mom is just checked out of his life.
Yep.
And it kind of seems like staff at school also are neglecting him because they're not noticing how drunk everyone else notices. Everyone else knows, like all the kids. So yeah. I don't know how much he was hiding his drinking. It could have been a cry for help. I don't know.
I think there were probably several cries for help that went unnoticed in his childhood.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say before we close up shop?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Well, everybody stay safe and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Bye. Bye.